Edition of The Drive, Dan Peck live from Nashville, SEC Media Days, day two, as the Auburn Tigers take the stage, among others, here in Nashville, second day of this event. Outstanding stuff so far. Weather could be impacting things a little bit later on as a thunderstorm has blown through Nashville. If we have any technical problems here during the show, I swear it wasn't our fault. I'm going to blame the lightning for it now that it's presented itself. Dan Peck here on Radio Row. Bill Cameron back in the studio. Drew at the controls. We've got a ton of audio, Auburn audio to run from the three players and Coach Hugh Freeze, who made his first appearance at Media Days today as Auburn's head coach. He's been to SEC Media Days before, but the first time in Auburn colors. Back-to-back national champion Georgia also at the podium today. We'll tell you about some of the things they had to say. Actually, all three of the teams other than Auburn on the podium today will be on Auburn's schedule this year. Mississippi State, Georgia, and Vanderbilt. So a day where there's a lot of interest around what was said with Auburn and three Auburn opponents from 2024, from 2023 taking the stage. However, we're thrilled to start the show with SEC coordinator of officiating, John McDade, who was able to take the stage in the big room and answer some questions in the electronic media room as well. Able to grab a couple minutes with John before he decides to retire here from Radio Row for the day. Busy Radio Row so far, right, John? What can you tell us?
It's hopping here, Dan. It's you're probably I don't know, my 15th interview this afternoon. a lot of fun. I mean, we're talking about football. What could be better?
Thank you for squeezing some time in for me, and yeah, by all means, get the vocal cords some rest after today is over. So I'd like to know from the big room and the small room, sort of what were the focuses today. From officiating, I heard you answer a question about pace and the speed of game times. I had a question about replay review. What seemed to be the most pertinent issues heading into this season from an officiating standpoint?
You know, the obvious question every season at this time of year, the media days, is what are the rule changes? And very minimum rule changes this year. I think the two that everyone will notice is we're going to keep the clock running on a first down in bounds outside of 2 minutes left in each half. And for those situations where your opponent's about to kick a field goal late in the half and your coach has two or more charge timeouts left, he's only going to be able to use one to ice that kicker, because now the rule is you can only take one charge timeout per dead ball period. So that's some of the focus. I also took the liberty this morning talking to everyone at my address is giving them a high-level, 30,000-foot view, if you will, of how I evaluate our football officiating. And I talked about the challenges related to two things. The challenge is related to where the game's evolving very quickly, and it's challenging for us as officials to keep ahead of the curve, to understand what the teams are trying to do, and not be surprised, be able to anticipate, and be able to apply the playing rules consistently against what's being done. What's going on between the offense and the defense pre-snap, with the coordinated abrupt stemming by the defense? Offense maybe is using the clap for the cadence. There's claps sometimes on the defense side of the ball. That's an example of something that's evolving very quickly in the game, and we're being challenged to stay ahead of it.
You know, just before we left for Media Days, we had a couple of callers on our show, and one of the things they would have wanted to hear from SEC leadership, and again, as comfortable as you feel talking about the exaggeration of injuries by defensive players to slow down possibly, you know, I got to be delicate here, possibly to slow down a high-tempo offense, and whether or not there can be penalties or what could be done from an official standpoint to discourage that sort of thing, and where we could go. Is that seen as an issue right now within officiating, within the conference?
There's certainly a concern of feigned injuries, right? Feigned injuries is not a part of the game. We don't need that to be a part of our
shouldn't
game.
Shouldn't be a strategic.
Exactly.
Thing,
yeah. But I made this comment several times last year, because two off seasons ago, the off season between the 21 and the 22 playing season, they spent a lot of time talking about what they might do with the playing rules to combat feigned injuries. Ultimately, and it was probably the second or third off season they talked about, ultimately decided to make no rule changes to combat it. I interpret that as it's not an officiating issue. right? And it's not. We can't ask our officials to discern what is a legitimate as opposed to a feigned injury. And we have to treat it as an injury because you just don't quite know. I'll just leave it at that. You know, if it's off the field that it needs to be addressed.
It may not be something that could be solved with the throwing of a penalty flag or something like that. It may need to be handled more administratively. I think you're right, because to task officials with determining what injuries are real and which ones aren't, I don't know how many medical doctors are serving as – I mean, I know there are a couple, but I don't know how many of them – you know what I mean? Like, that does feel like it would be –
That's a great point. Even a player goes down, how often does the doctor say, well, that's a feigned injury? That's against their training, right?
I mean, I don't – do no harm. I don't know – it feels like a problem that any solution would maybe create new problems, mm-hmm. which doesn't mean it's not a problem. Mm-hmm. But to task the officials with fixing it does seem like you're asking you guys to go sort of out of your area of expertise. We were talking about replay review in the small room and whether or not changes could be on the horizon to how replay is handled and whether or not there could be a different system, especially with pace of play being a bigger issue moving forward. Where are you at the moment on instant replay?
You know, I won't give you my personal opinion as much as I'll try to give you a flavor of what the stakeholders of the game are talking about. They're becoming concerned of how replay affects the flow of the game. Are we stopping the game too many times? Are we stopping the games for plays that have competitive impact, or are we stopping the game to just correct a 1.5 yard difference on upcoming second down? And We have a model where replay is expected to stop each and every play that there's compelling video evidence that there is an error made on the field. And so there's no limit on the number of times we can stop the game. When we do stop the game, the standards that we're using, the judgments we're using, what is indisputable video evidence or not, we're in a pretty good place. That doesn't mean every time I believe we made a correct replay decision, the teams agree with me. But I think we're in a pretty good place. How much we stop the game, I think, is the volume on that is being turned up, it appears, each offseason.
Talking with SEC Coordinator of Officiating, John McDade, here on Radio Row on the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Bill, I don't want to let John McDade leave without asking anything you'd want to know. You got anything for him?
No, I think you pretty much covered everything. I've heard John at three or four of his stops along the way, and I think you pretty much hit most of them. I mean, the main thing folks had been concerned with, obviously, was, you know, how much are we going to miss of the ball game? And I really don't think it's going to be terribly significant. And I heard the commissioner saying, you know, it's not completely about making the game shorter. It's just trying to actually keep things moving along and flowing a little better.
You got it, Bill. You nailed it.
So, John, yeah, wanted to just take up a couple minutes of your time here. Thank you so much for making some time.
Oh, it's great being here.
Like you said, I know Radio Row has been and Bill, John, you're familiar with the Auburn area a little bit, right? You've made a couple of trips down there.
Maybe 10, 15 times.
Hopefully, you know, Auburn, ESPN 106.7, Wings 94.3 can be something you make a point to check out the next time you're in town. But it was great to talk to you. Outstanding work today. And thank you for joining us.
Thanks for the invitation. I appreciated visiting with you guys.
Absolutely. Right, don't be a stranger, John. John McDade, SEC Coordinator of Officiating, making some time for us on a busy Tuesday here at Radio Row. And, again, thanks to John McDade for a little bit of that. How about that, Bill? John McDade just walking by and willing to pop in, give us a couple minutes.
Yeah, he's very impressive. Very impressive.
Yeah.
You checked his whole resume. I mean, he's done a few things.
I am familiar.
Yeah.
I am familiar with what this guy can do. And it was great to chat with him for a few minutes. I asked him in the small room, I asked him about field storming and sort of the conference's opinion on that.
Oh,
and
yeah.
He gave a brief answer, but that's really outside of the, you know, sort of like what he was talking about. That's also a thing where that's not really an official.
No, that's, you know, a conference thing, sort of, right.
He was punting that to the conference while also acknowledging that the officials, you know, have some role in that. But
yeah, well, one of their jobs is to get off the field as fast as they can, too.
Yeah, it was great to talk to John McDade just now. Hope folks enjoyed that.
Hey, so I heard Heard Jacob talking about you guys getting a little rain.
It is, yeah. There is a thunderstorm that has blown in the last hour or 2 hours or so.
What's that going to do to the end of the concert tonight?
It is going to imperil the block party and the concert is what I would say based on, and I'm not an expert on these sorts of things. I have not been hired by the conference to speak to this. I don't think people are going to be outdoors partying
You never know. It's got a few hours.
Well, and I think setup might have been impacted more than the ability to do the event, because I don't know how much. I mean, they've been building that stage for a couple of days. I imagine Midland would have wanted a sound check or some instruments and things like that going on. So I don't know what the block party, what this could mean for the block party later on today.
Meanwhile, here it's like 90. It's upper 90s, and blazing. So that's what you're missing here. Yeah,
the heat dome is apparently settling right over us, Bill, in Auburn, it'll be ready for this weekend when we're back at least. So that's nice that I won't miss all of the dangerous heat that you have there in the Auburn Opelika area right now.
Oh, you're right. Just getting underway here on the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Dan, as you can tell, up on Radio Row at the Grand Hyatt in Nashville, day two of SEC Media Days. Bill and Drew here in the studio. Hour number one of The Drive, brought to you by the good folks at Kia of Auburn on South College and KiaofAuburn.com. Kia of Auburn, where you're always number one. They're also the sponsor of our hotline. You can call us 334-321-1390, or you can text us on the Drive text box, which is brought to you by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, and the text number 334-564-1840. So we're just getting underway. Yes, a big day today with Hugh Freeze and Auburn's representatives there. We've got audio from quite a few different people. No telling who will be wandering by up and down Radio Row, especially with the inability to be hanging out outside, getting out right now, at least there. So we'll have that audio. But we'd love for you to join in as well. Anything on your mind? There was some news from Hugh Freeze today. He updated some of the players as far as injuries and their availability. We'll talk about that more.
Maybe I should point out, Bill, I was able to sneak into the huddle earlier today. So I was there, and I talked with our buddy Kirk. And pretty much nothing that was said can't be shared publicly.
Right.
So we've got a lot of stuff that we can report on different aspects of the team that we got to hear from Hugh Freeze earlier today. I was also able to sit down with Luke Deal, and we've got some audio from that coming up later in the show. Luke Deal, by the way, huge Wings 94 fan. Huge fan of Wings 94.
Is that right? A classic hits
Deal,
fan, eh?
Luke Deal loves his classic hits. He was fired up to learn that the football games are going to be on Wings 94.3 starting this upcoming season. Tiger Talk, men's basketball, and football on Wings 94.3. Want to shout out the sponsors, Bill, the Orthopedic Clinic, Tim Jones, Farmers Insurance, and Wickles Pickles for helping keep our coverage on the air here in Nashville.
Absolutely. We'll get to our first break. A lot more to come. Stick with us. Join us here on the Tuesday Drive.
Cole here.
Too, or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Tuesday afternoon. Bill in the studio here at home with, not at home, not at my home, in our home studio in Auburn at the network, while Dan is at SEC Media Days, halfway done as far as the participants now. 7 of the 14 SEC coaches and their representatives have been there. Let's see now. I've heard interviews with Elijah McAllister, and man, there's no question why he was selected by Hugh Freeze. Very, very impressive is Elijah. Heard an interview or two with Luke Deal, and Dan's got one as a matter of fact as well. I guess Cam Stutz is the only player that I have, the only Auburn rep that I haven't heard some from today. How did Cam do?
Cam did great. I was able to ask Cam a bunch of questions in the small room, so we we have that as well. And we've been, like you said, you never know who's going to pop by Radio Row. Bit of a Georgia takeover here, Bill, as we've got our good buddies Jordan Hill and Ben Woke report. What's the outlet officially, guys? I don't want to get this one wrong.
Dogs 24/7.
From the Dogs 24/7, the fine publication that covers Georgia over there in Athens. For the
24/7 all it takes is you guys to leave Auburn and head to Athens, and national championships ensue, right?
Yeah, I mean, you think about the pipeline from Auburn to Georgia. I don't want to compare us to, like, Vince Dooley, but
Pat Dye, Jordan Hill. I mean, it's right there. It just rolls right off the tongue.
And you know, both of those gentlemen were name-checked by Kirby Smart in the small room when I asked him about the priority of keeping the Auburn-Georgia rivalry on the schedule moving forward.
Are you serious?
And significant to him. That was Mike.
Wow.
I got to ask one of the first questions to Kirby, and he talked about both of them. Not Jordan and Ben.
Right.
I thought that's what you meant. We got to keep this thing going for guys like Jordan and Ben.
It's like, I meant Vince Dooley and Pat Dye.
Oh, well, I was really going to be impressed, guys. I'm a little disappointed now.
No, I'm sorry. You know what? It was still an impressive answer and something that showed that, you know, it is an important game. And I'll ask you guys about that because the schedule is uncertain after 2024. It's believed that Alabama and Georgia are sort of the two bulletproof games, the unmovable games from Auburn's schedule. I'd love to know from a Georgia perspective, is there a belief that you got to keep the Auburn game on the schedule and it needs to be preserved moving forward?
I mean, I would say so. I can't imagine college football without Georgia and Auburn playing each other. I don't just say that as someone that's covered both programs. I mean, how can you watch a college football season that doesn't have the Deep South's oldest rivalry? My thought on it is eventually there will be a 9-game season. I think cooler heads will prevail and the right thing will happen there. And once that happens, I think there's a no-brainer that that'll sustain. But, yeah, I mean, I can't even think of a world where that game doesn't get
played. And there are so many Georgia players on both sides. I mean, ignoring the tradition, which is hard to do because it's been played, correct me if I'm wrong, Bill, about as much as any rivalry out there.
Anyone in the Deep South, no question. And, yeah. I mean, and Jordan and Ben, I mean, you guys are younger guys. But, I mean, you know, for anyone who is, you know, especially 40 or older, this is, you know, it's right there. It's Alabama and Georgia are the two games that would just be, it feels like criminal not to have. I know a lot of younger fans are going, nah, and I heard one earlier today, a member of the media that covers Auburn going, no, Auburn needs LSU. They don't need Georgia. I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that Georgia's won 15 of the last 18.
I think a big thing, and you see this in college football in general, is it's just so cyclical. And I think look at Georgia-Florida. I mean, for the better part of my lifetime, Florida dominated that rivalry. And for Georgia fans, every 1 year out of like six they would win it was humongous. And I think that right now Auburn's kind of on the other side of that with Georgia. And I think about what Dan said a few minutes ago about players from the state of Georgia that play for both teams. You know, I always think about my dad who grew up a huge Georgia fan. Every year, especially when I was covering Auburn, he would like text me or call me and be like, why are there so many kids from Georgia that play at Auburn? And I'm like, Dad, you know, there's only so many spots. But that always adds to that rivalry, and it's what I love about rivalries like this. I talk about it a lot when I'm on radio stations like in Columbus about, you know, when you're in West Georgia, Georgia-Auburn is so big, and I'm sure it's the same for people in East Alabama. That rivalry means so much to so many people, and you understand with how much the sport is changing, there are things that you're going to lose, but you've got to have some, you know, a line in the sand where you say, we are not going to cross that, and I think Georgia-Auburn needs to be that.
And part of the reason why there are so many Georgia players at Auburn is because there are Georgia players everywhere. I mean, the state cranks out so much high-level talent, but Auburn, you know, is one place that historically has done very well going into Georgia and being able to pull players out, and I think you would jeopardize that. From the Auburn side, I think you'd jeopardize that if you took Georgia off the schedule. Like, I think it would be much harder for Auburn to recruit in the state. I don't know what removing the Florida game has done to Auburn's recruiting in the state of Florida. Can't imagine
it. It hasn't helped, especially further down.
I think you take Georgia off the schedule and you run the risk of not being able to recruit as well in the state of Georgia, which would really throw a wrench into Auburn's plans.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a great point. And, I mean, I think if you ask folks on the Georgia side as well, I mean, obviously the Florida game is one that Georgia fans would feel like they need to lock in. But after that, I think you would get a 100% reaction of Auburn has to be on the schedule beyond the Florida game.
So let me ask you guys about this upcoming season for Georgia. I mean, Georgia's your back-to-back national champion. I think there's a very good chance that Georgia is riding a 20-game win streak when they come to Jordan-Hare. Not 20 against Auburn, just feels that way.
Yeah, it does
but
feel
a 20
like
game
that.
Win, yeah, 20-game win streak overall when they come to Jordan-Hare. What can you tell us about this year's team? Where do you think they're going to be strong? And I think more interestingly, where do you think there could be question marks going into the season?
Well, I think the biggest thing, let's start on offense. They are super deep at wide receiver. You know, there was some talk today about, you know, you lose Darnell Washington. Well, he was behind the John Mackey Award winner in Brock Bowers, so you have him back. They're very deep, like I said, at receiver. They got to figure out quarterback, although it really looks like Carson Beck will be the guy. And then on defense, I think the secondary is super, super dangerous. I think that this has a chance to be probably the top secondary in the SEC and also the entire country. To me, the biggest question on defense, it's going to be outside linebacker. You lose Nolan Smith, you lose Robert Bill, and you've got Chaz Chambliss, who's going to be a junior, who's the most experienced, but he's not really played a ton. He had to step up when Nolan Smith got hurt last year. And I'm really intrigued by this Auburn game because if you look at Georgia's games before that, UT Martin, Ball State, you do have South Carolina that is a home game, and then you have UAB, and then you're going to Auburn. And I feel like whoever wins that quarterback battle between Carson Beck and Brock Vandegrift, no matter what, that's a huge test to have to go into Jordan-Hare. And we know, you know, I always think about Harsin's first Iron Bowl. You know, I think that that was a inferior team against Alabama, and they almost won. They should have won that game. So, you know, you think about the atmosphere that that quarterback will be stepping into. It's going to be a real test.
It's and the atmosphere at Jordan-Hare Stadium has come up a lot. You know, it's, it, you know, both the players and Hugh Freeze and even opposing players who have faced that atmosphere have been talking about it. With Georgia, it does seem like we've gone from believing that Stetson Bennett was – holding Georgia back, and it's like, oh, imagine if they had a better quarterback. And now the departure of Stetson Bennett is for folks who don't want Georgia to get a third straight national championship and don't want Georgia's run to continue. It's almost like, well, you need to hope that Stetson Bennett was really special, right? And no one else on the roster has what he has. What are you imagining we're going to see out of these quarterbacks?
Well, I think that you're right. People have played both sides of that coin with Stetson Bennett, but I think to an extent where they've landed now, I tend to subscribe to that as well. Like, he made plays when plays broke down that you don't know what the next guy is going to be able to do. And obviously, to your point, Dan, there were plenty of doubters saying, can they win a national championship with Stetson Bennett? Obviously, yes, they can. They can win two, but when it comes to Carson Beck, who I think Jordan and I probably both assume will be the starting quarterback for Georgia, I think when things are going right, when guys win their matchups, I feel like Carson Beck has all the tools that you need to be successful. I think the question that is going to come up, and we'll probably find that out maybe a little bit in the South Carolina game, but really when you go to Jordan-Hare and play Auburn, what happens when things go wrong? What happens when everything isn't going perfectly? Because Stetson Bennett could get you out of a lot of jams, and you saw that time and time again, that when things were not going right, Stetson Bennett had a solution for it. So,
yeah, he made some plays with his legs and of course, obviously with his arm as well. Hey, guys, I wanted to get your thoughts. First of all, I thought Kirby very on point, as you knew he would be. I mean, he's always very impressive. Talking about, the fighting against complacency or ever taking a day off. Always interesting to hear his comments as Georgia goes for an unprecedented third straight national championship. I know Minnesota claims three, but you're talking about undisputed national championships. But I'd love your thoughts, both of your thoughts on Hugh Freeze and how he did today.
Yeah, you know, I think that he came in and it seemed like he had a plan with how he was going to handle media days. And from everything I saw and heard, I thought he did a really good job. You know, I think they understood some of the talking points, some of the things that would be asked from the media. And, you know, I think that he passed with the flying colors. And, you know, I thought the players, too, I bounced around and talked to some of those guys. I really like what they had to say. And, you know, I think if you, especially even outside of the Auburn program, when you looked at the list of players, you were sort of like, that's interesting who they're sending. But I thought they really represented Auburn well, really well-spoken, thought out. I think that they were perfect selections for Auburn to show what to expect in year one with Hugh.
I've felt this way since the hire, but I feel like Hugh Freeze is the perfect fit for Auburn. Like, just everything that he believes in, everything that the way that he carries himself, the way that he recruits. I mean, it is a perfect fit for what Auburn's trying to do. I think you saw that today, just in how he carried himself at the podium. I think you've seen that on the recruiting trail early on in terms of what he's been able to do to get into certain battles as well. So, you know, my big takeaway from it is it really does feel like an Auburn head coach up there when Hugh Freeze is at the podium.
Were either of you guys were either of you two or Dan surprised that there wasn't more? I really thought there would be a couple of people wanting to take shots and asking him a question or two, like we heard when he was first introduced about him deserving a second shot. But I didn't really hear any of that today.
Yeah, and, you know, I thought that was kind of a trend with just some of the other coaches. Like with Kirby Smart, there really wasn't a ton other than there was one question about some of the driving-related incidents. Mm-hmm. I was really expecting sort of a barrage on Kirby, and there really wasn't that much of it. So I think that when you had that sort of earlier on and then to not really encounter that with Hugh, I didn't entirely – I mean, I was surprised, but it did make sense once you kind of saw that pattern.
Everyone gets a little soft when they get into that big room, you know.
Yeah, you know, especially now – I wonder if there was a lack of desire to be the main character today from some of the media members. And I agree. I thought Hugh Freeze would face more questions about the circumstances surrounding his departure from Ole Miss, some of the folks around Auburn who felt strongly about him not deserving the job. But it really was much more about focus, you know, about
football. It was about football. That was nice.
About his decision, about why he would leave. And this is something people forget. But he did have a pretty stable thing going there at Liberty. He's mentioned it before. He probably could have kept winning 8 games a year, and he could have been Liberty's coach for the rest of his life. And to decide to gamble that against going to an SEC school, you know, I think he was able to answer questions about that aspect of his story much more than, whether or not anything from his past was disqualifying or you know, I don't think folks really wanted to. I mean, He briefly, you know, sort of acknowledged it, but moved on, and most of the questions he got, and I wouldn't have guessed this a couple of hours ago, the vast majority of questions he got were about football.
Yeah, I love that, too. I'm glad that it was that way. I mean, I know that there was obviously going to be the storyline, but I'm glad that it wasn't.
And he doesn't shy away from it. I mean, I've been saying that he doesn't want to dwell on his past, but he acknowledges, you know, how he got here and the things that happened that made him who he is now. But no, I think it was much more about football and getting to hear him answer questions about Peyton Thorne and the other 41 new players on this roster was, I thought there was great stuff from Hugh Freeze. Briefly, let folks know how they can find the great work you guys do.
Yeah, Dogs 24/7, like Jordan said at the top. If you're so inclined to subscribe, absolutely do. But you can follow me on Twitter at Benjamin Wolk.
Yeah, just remember to stay woke. That's always the advice.
Oh, yeah.
I know the Auburn fans
there's
remember
always,
that.
Always plenty of info there. Hey, it's great hearing you guys. Looking forward to seeing y'all in a couple of months.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Really looking forward to the Auburn-Georgia game.
Hey, you guys,
this year. And
don't let Dan get too crazy up there. I know that's a big ask. I mean, a big ask.
Well, you know, we'll see. We'll see, Bill. I mean, the rain's letting up. So maybe Broadway can open up after all a little bit later tonight. Jordan and Ben, outstanding stuff. Dogs247 is the website. Go check them out. They will keep you up to date on everything going on in the world of Georgia Bulldogs athletics. Thanks for joining us, guys.
Absolutely.
Thanks for having us.
We'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Hey, you can join in on the Kia of Auburn hotline, but we got plenty of audio we'll get to. But your calls come first here on the Tuesday edition of The Drive.
Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Tuesday afternoon. Hope everybody doing well. It is sunny and hot here in Auburn. I know that there was some rain there in Nashville. Maybe it's slacking off a little bit, but tell you what, the info isn't. Big day today. Auburn, one of 4 schools. Auburn, Georgia, Vandy, Mississippi State today representing at SEC Media Days, day number 2. And Dan, you said earlier you got a chance to sort of get in the huddle there with the beat writers for Auburn. That's always good because an opportunity for the folks who are around Auburn and covering it all the time to ask some questions of the coach before he goes into the big room. And there was some interesting information that came out.
Yeah, and I want to I want to say thanks to the Auburn Athletic Department for making Coach Freeze available to the folks who cover the team before he went in the big room or the E-room, just so, you know, that the reporters can get their answer, their questions answered without having to compete with everybody
right.
else for Coach Freeze's attention. Also, maybe asking some questions that maybe Hugh Freeze wouldn't be thrilled about answering.
He also answered some questions were able to be asked that other folks might not have been asking. I mean, asking about the health status of a few players and things like that. That's probably not going to be asked in the big room.
So he had no comment on Jarquez. Without really getting into more detail than that, he said, you know, he can't really comment on university procedure. It was the answer I think you were expecting, Bill, mm-hmm. University policies and procedures.
Right.
He acknowledged DeMario Tolan no longer with the team and mentioned that it was a personal situation. You know, didn't really want to talk about what the future could mean, just sort of confirming that a DeMario Tolan is not with the program at the moment. Acknowledged with the two junior college players. The two players that we're waiting to hear from, whether or not their status will allow them to go to Auburn this fall. He sounded more enthusiastic about Jamison Travis than he did about Sori being able to get out there this fall. No real injury news.
Well, I thought the Brian Batty was the most intriguing injury news because everybody else sounded like they were cleared.
I was going to get to that. It seems like Jeremiah Wright, Tate Johnson, J.D. Rim is the good news. You know, those guys sound like they'll be close to ready to go, if not ready to go, when Auburn takes the field for fall practice in a couple of weeks. Brian Batty had the off-season surgery on his toe, and Hugh Freeze acknowledged that he wished he felt a little bit better about where Batty is at the moment, but he's going to try to play through it and recover over the course of the season. Jair Shorter is somebody that they're watching, because Jair had a bit of an injury past mm-hmm. at North Texas before coming in. He also, I asked him about the three receivers that Auburn assigned since spring was over. He seemed to indicate Caleb Burton was more of a long-term deal, somebody, and he, in part because he has 4 years of eligibility remaining, but I think that might be someone. He didn't acknowledge an injury with Burton, but the way he was talking about Caleb Burton made him seem like he might be more of a project for the future than someone who's going to contribute right now at receiver, especially compared to Shane Hooks and Jair Shorter, who are both guys with one year left.
I was going to say I could add a little bit to that because I heard another interview with him where he was asked about Caleb Burton, and he said he knows less about Caleb Burton than he does the others. He knows what he was as a high school player, and he knows he's been hearing that he's been doing well in some of the workouts, but there is just more for him to base what he knows about Hooks and Shorter than he does on Caleb Burton. But then he said, yes, but it's great that he has 4 years of eligibility.
So he was asked about the quarterbacks, and he acknowledged that he hasn't seen Peyton Thorne do very much in person since joining the team. But he talked about getting with Kent Austin and Philip Montgomery and devising a plan for what Auburn is going to be able to do to narrow this quarterback battle down. Seems like in the first 10 days of practice, they're going to keep it open to three and then maybe try to whittle it down after that. No word on how long the quarterback battle could stretch into the season, but seems like they want to get this thing down to two within the first 2 weeks mm-hmm. of fall practice, if not sooner. And I wouldn't just assume that it's Robbie and Peyton if this thing gets down to two because of the way Robbie and Holden were competing in the spring. I would say those are your favorites when this thing is narrowed down to two, but I would not rule the possibility of Holden Gurner being able to, and he didn't talk as much about Holden as he did about Robbie and Peyton. But I would keep the chances of Holden staying in this battle. I'd keep an open mind about it.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see when they do cut down to two, and it'll be pretty obvious when two are getting the bulk of the snaps and the other is going over and working with the scout team. Now, he did say that he really likes Hank Brown's ability, but you can't work four. So, I mean, that's going to be the plan. He raved about Peyton Thorne when he was being interviewed by the guys on the SEC Network today. And I know he'd mentioned there in the big room that one of the first things Peyton did was asking for everyone's name and their pictures, if he had them, of everyone there in the building so he could get to know all of them, and really talked about his leadership. Of course, he's been a two-time captain. It's interesting, isn't it, that Auburn got transfers who have been two-time captains. Elijah McAllister was a two-time captain at Vandy. Peyton Thorne, a two-time captain at Michigan State, among their transfers.
I'm the guy who asked Elijah McAllister if he plans on running for president. So, I mean, I was as impressed as just about anybody with that one. And that was after someone on the beat earlier turned to me and said he's going to be president someday after their interview. So, yeah, it sounds like Auburn has found a really special young man in Elijah McAllister. Now, he has a bit of an injury history, too. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it remains to be seen what he can do on the field. But, boy, is that a guy I would want on my football team. Right, I mean, not to mention, Bill, I think he's about as tall as Jani Broome, too. Can I tell you, like, having been around both of them in the last couple of weeks, I don't know who's taller between Jani Broome and Elijah McAllister. This guy is, and maybe it's just that he has perfect posture, but this guy is, I mean, he is very, very impressive. And since we're talking about some of the stuff, do you want to hear, Bill, do you want to hear my question in the small room to Hugh Freeze about the advantages and disadvantages of recruiting to Auburn? Because I got to ask him a question. He gave me a pretty long answer.
Yeah, sure.
About it that I thought was pretty cool. So let me see if I can pull up what
Dan Peck, ESPN 106.7 in Auburn. Coach, 42 new players on the roster since the season ended. You've been working really hard in recruiting. What are the benefits of recruiting to Auburn, and any challenges you've encountered trying to recruit to Auburn along the way?
Benefits. I think Auburn should be easy to recruit to. We've got the support, the administration, the facilities, the history. It ought to be Jordan Hare's an incredible place to go play a game in. So I think we have a lot of great things. I think the culture in the Auburn family is great to recruit to. I think the challenges are you have to hear from a lot of the players that you're recruiting that are elite players, there's no alignment at Auburn. There's no alignment at Auburn. Well, that may have been the case in the past. That's not the case now. And I think they'll sense that if we can get them to campus and they can see the alignment that we have from President Roberts down to John Cohen, to myself, and to our staff. And so I think the positives far outweigh. I think the greatest challenge that you mentioned is the fact that we have 42 new players and I don't know all their names yet. That's the way I feel. I do. But, I mean, I have not had a time to have deep conversation with all of them. I mean, you literally recruit a portal kid for 2 days, you sign him, he comes to work, and particularly the ones after spring, they come to work with your strength staff and you're trying to take a little time off, and I mean, you really, that's uncomfortable. And how we're going to mold that in a short amount of time into a unit and a team is probably one of the, that back to the first question, that may be my greatest challenge to turn this program as fast as the others, is because there's so many, there's so much new to this.
That was Auburn head coach Hugh Freeze answering my questions about the challenges of recruiting to Auburn and some of the benefits of being able to recruit to Auburn, some of the advantages that he now finds himself in. And that, you know, that line he had about alignment, Bill, was something he made. That's something
he mentioned that at multiple stops.
Yeah, it sounds like that's been something he's been encountering on the trail, sort of the reputation.
Oh, that's what a lot of people had always had been saying about Auburn. They go, you don't want to go there. They're not on the same page. He doesn't have the support from the administration, or the AD's not behind him. And that's something that it's obvious that Hugh Freeze wants everyone to know. Hey, they've got things together, from Chris Roberts to John Cohen to Hugh Freeze. They are aligned.
Yeah, I mean, it was he was taking strides to sort of stop that, mm-hmm. That talking point in its tracks that Auburn is not a place where players want to go because Auburn is not on the same page. And I could see why, you know, especially for the kind of players Hugh Freeze wants to recruit, he can't have that out there. He can't have that reputation of Auburn being dysfunctional behind the scenes, and I think he's doing all he can, not just with a microphone in his hand, but also when the camera's not on him. Hugh Freeze is doing what he can to make sure folks know Auburn is on the same page.
Yeah, you know that is the case. And I thought that was a really interesting answer, and it's sort of a catch-22. Yeah, it's got to be tougher for him than ever trying to turn this thing around quickly because he isn't as familiar with the players. But on the other hand, it's so much better that he was able to go out there and bring in as many new players to upgrade the talent that he's working with.
Yeah, I thought it was some really cool stuff. You want to hear, since we're running some of the audio from players that I got to talk to today, I had a question for Luke Deal about Peyton Thorne, and thought maybe Luke Deal. I thought Luke Deal did a great job, by the way. We talked to him, big Wings 94 fan, as we were mentioning. You know, I got to talk to him a little bit before he took the podium and got to answer questions. But I thought maybe you'd want to hear what Luke Deal had to say about Auburn's new transfer portal quarterback.
Yeah, we can do that. I tell you what, we need to get to our final break, and then we'll see if
Let's run some Luke Deal when we come back.
All right, we'll do that. Stick with us as we continue here on the Tuesday Drive.
Whether you're a senior golfer or pro athlete, high school football player, or Little League Super...
1-390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email thedrive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Tuesday afternoon. Bill and Drew in the studio in Auburn while Dan is on Radio Row in Nashville with day two of SEC Media Days.
That's right, and we're about to wrap up hour number one. I got a couple of shorter answers from some of these guys. You want to hear what Luke Deal had to say about Peyton Thorne?
Absolutely. I mean, Auburn, he knows better than a lot of people. I mean, the coaches haven't been able to really watch him, just the strength coaches. But obviously Luke Deal among the guys that have been working out with Peyton.
Yeah, so the first thing, like you said, the learning a new offense is always a challenge. I've learned a few now, and some younger guys don't really understand how to go about that, the best way to go about that. So I think just learning the offense at a good pace, learning it and refining our new techniques and everything that goes with that, we've done that this summer, last spring. And also, like you said, off field. I mean, we've had a bunch of transfers, a bunch of recruits come in and join this team. So being able to build relationships with those guys, get to know them, get to know their story, their why, that's been a huge part of our offseason program so far.
All right, that was also, you know, the answer was also about learning the new offense and some of the changes. He didn't get too much into Peyton Thorne. There's another answer he gave where he talked some more about Peyton Thorne, more in depth. But, I mean, I think people forget amid all the changes, right, that you've also got Hugh Freeze installing this offense with Kent Austin and Philip Montgomery, the offensive coordinator, and whoever's playing quarterback is going to have a lot to learn quickly.
Yeah, and Coach Freeze talked about that, about, you know, one of the things that he wanted with Philip Montgomery was someone who, you know, understood and would and ran the same type offense and also had simple terminology. He said he wanted it to be a little different than some of the other terminology he had used because he's been around and talked to too many other coaches in the Southeastern Conference and said, maybe I talk too much to them about what I do.
Yeah, I thought Hugh Freeze, again, you know, getting back to we were waiting to see how today went. I think we're going to talk with Justin Lee.
Oh, man, he was comfortable, wasn't he?
I think we're going to talk with Justin Lee from the OA News in hour number two about how he thought Hugh Freeze did. But it's – yeah, I do not think Hugh Freeze – it's a very important day for Hugh Freeze, and I think he did – I think he represented himself very well.
All right, we're halfway done here on the Tuesday Drive. We'll continue Dan in Nashville. Bill here in the studio in Auburn, Drew at the controls for it all. You can join in as well. Give us a call on the Kia of Auburn hotline, 334-321-1390. Text us on the Drive text box, and that is 334-564-1840. Or you can listen to all the audio that we have. More interviews coming up. Hour number two of the Tuesday Drive.
Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Tuesday Drive. It is day two of SEC Media Days in Nashville. And our Dan Peck is there on Radio Row. And all kinds of folks are there covering thousands, I mean literally thousands of credentials handed out. A lot of them legit to folks covering the coaches and players.
But enough about Rob from Memphis.
Yeah. Hey, I heard him get that. I heard him get the question in. That's right.
He just walked by right in front of us, Bill. So I had to mention that as our good buddy. Yeah, is also a credentialed. And speaking of people asking good questions, two of my favorites are joining us here on Radio Row, Bill. The Auburn. You know, we've said before, Auburn's lucky to have as many talented journalists as it has covering the team. I think two of the young guns that we've got here, two of my favorites, Justin Lee, Adam Cole from the OA News, are sitting here at Radio Row.
Well, yes, good. Sir. It's a good thing it's radio. Their shirts aren't blinding me right now.
Oh, my God. Wow.
Word travels fast.
Word's not even here. And
Bill, I would like you to let you know, I am not wearing a Hawaiian shirt.
Well,
I am, as a matter of fact. Bill said, yeah.
There you go.
I'm not wearing a Hawaiian shirt or any shirt for that matter.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Party here at Radio Row.
Then thank everything that this is radio.
No, so we've had a... Yeah, we've had the chance now to hear from Hugh Freeze and all three players.
Hold on, Dad. This might be my Drive debut, I think, after years.
I believe it is.
Was that the right? Rich Perkins and Mayor Ron Anders show, were they the Drive or not?
That was the Drive. That indeed
that
was.
That was the Drive. So it's my first time since then.
Is that right? Is
this my first time since
it's
like
It's all Dan's your fault. First villain? I mean, you know, I don't book the guests.
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Well, my first time since the mayor was hosted. Obviously, me and Dan have talked a lot. We talked on the lunch break.
But that also means that either me or Bill will be the next mayor
of
Auburn, which is good.
Probably not going to be me. So.
Well, you know, that's
– I'd vote for you, Bill.
I will serve admirably, all right, if drafted. I will be able to. So, no, Justin, welcome to the show. Yeah. I think this is Adam.
This is
Drive debut as well. And guys, welcome. And it's been a – I mean, I think this was a big day for Hugh Freeze. There was going to be attention on, you know, his first major appearance, you know, outside of the, you know, sort of the Auburn confines of media. Now you've got Hugh Freeze taking the stage in the big room, making some national television appearances as well.
Sure.
How do you think Hugh Freeze did?
Yeah, I mean, I think they got out of it pretty unscathed. They had the. A question about, you know, a potential suspension situation with the university, and he had to, you know, say his line that he's not going to comment on university policies. But, you know, besides that, there wasn't, you know, no one on the main stage tried to bring up any past stuff with Ole Miss or anything like that. So I think they came in here and did what they wanted to do. I think he wanted to temper expectations a little bit. I mean, he's already been doing that, so I think his message has been. He was able to keep his message consistent and get out of it with no major issues.
Yeah, I was honestly kind of shocked there wasn't, because this is the first time, I mean, really, he's talked to national media all in one setting anyway since he got hired. And I was kind of shocked there weren't more questions about, you know, like his past and things like that. But, you know, I mean, that's probably what Auburn wanted and what he wanted. And, you know, kind of like Justin said, it's been very tempered expectations and, right. You know, just kind of downplaying it almost.
It is a return to the SEC, but Hugh Freeze was coaching Division I college football, bowl subdivision college football the last couple of years. I wonder if maybe because he's still been in you know, on the radar in college football,
it's
that maybe if Hugh Freeze were about to coach his first football game since 2016,
right.
I feel like the questions about his past and whether or not he's paid his dues and whether he's going to look like on the other side of this adversity, that would have been top of mind today.
Right.
But since he's been around, maybe, because I was expecting it nevertheless.
Right.
But since, now we've seen it and people didn't really want to go there, they wanted to ask more about the situation he's stepping into, the way he's remade this roster, and I think Hugh Freeze was happy to answer some football questions.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. You know, and we were talking about Dan. I think one of the most just thinking about what was actually interesting. What we do, because it was a lot of, you know, when we met with him, the smaller beat, it was a lot of like injury updates and that kind of thing. Who's this new addition got in the summer? I think one of the just thinking about some of the more interesting things. I think one was just like how new this roster will be. He said we're gonna have to do the tape on our players' helmets and put their names on it like it's day one again.
Made reference in the small room to not knowing everyone's names yet.
Yeah, right, that's what I mean. Yeah.
Well, he'll fit right in with a couple of former coaches then. I mean, I understand the last one didn't either.
And, you know, and speaking of learning folks' names, I was told that Peyton Thorne went out of his the story going around, Bill. I don't know if you know about
that. Oh, I heard that. Yeah.
Peyton Thorne went out of his way to learn faces and learn names of the people he was going to be interacting with in the athletic department.
Right.
I think to try to hurry up the adjustment period.
Sure.
When you're a transfer quarterback coming and looking to start, you know, when you're going to go 3 months from arriving on campus to being the starter, I mean, you got to accelerate the clock. And he's taken steps to do it, not just by, you know, ingratiating himself with his teammates, but also by trying to do stuff like learning the names of everybody involved.
Yeah, and that's the biggest update we got from Peyton, because obviously Hugh can't watch him in the summer do voluntary workouts. The coach can't be there. So that was the biggest thing we learned about him. But you know, that's something.
So where are you on sort of where expectations should be about this team right now heading into the year? We're going to see where Auburn is voted.
Right.
By the media members before the week is over.
Right.
I think either Auburn or Mississippi State will be picked to finish last in the West. I'm not,
I agree.
Not sure which one.
Probably.
But it's I wonder where you guys are on where expectations should be and what you think this team can do this year.
I think Hugh is very smart to just kind of temper expectations and kind of put it out there, because you know everyone's excited about recruiting, like you just look online, but those guys aren't going to be here yet. This was a team that really struggled last year. At 5, 6, 7 wins. You know, we were talking about it earlier. You know, I think it would be a huge victory if you could have a year, kind of like Gene Chizik's first year in 2009, where you get 7 wins and you get that bowl win, 8 wins. Hey, man, mm-hmm. I'd call that a huge success. And that's not me, you know, down in Auburn. I'm just saying I will be surprised, and I will give Hugh a lot of credit if they win 8. 9 games? That'd be really impressive.
It'd be nine would be fantastic. 19. Yeah.
Right. That would be really impressive. So it's, you know, it's one thing, you know, people hear us, you know, speculating like, oh, they'll only win 6 games or whatever. But what you take with that is, well, if they do it, then we're going to be the first ones to say, you did a great job if you do better than that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very much like, I think realistically, like you got to look 6-7 win range. I think that's easy and doable. And you got 4 non-con games that should be pretty much a breeze. But like, that's the thing, is it's like if all the dominoes fall the right way, I mean, like, you completely retool your receiving core with some really exciting pieces that have a lot of potential, and you've got an offensive line now that's just, I mean, loaded with experience and quite frankly, talent that you went and got in the portal, and those were probably the 2 biggest points of need. And, you know, there's a lot of things that will need to be answered in the early weeks, but, like, you know, it could be exciting, but it's probably going to sit at, like, 6-7 in a bowl appearance, you know.
Well, there's a reason that the number is 5. The reason the number is like 5.8 right now. I mean, that's it makes sense because these guys are still learning each other. They're still going to be learning the offense. I wanted to ask you guys, I mean, Hugh really complimentary of both of his quarterbacks. Just your thoughts. I mean, I think most of us are assuming that it's going to be Peyton as the quarterback. Of course, a lot of us were assuming it was Zach last year. So that tells you how much we know. But, I mean, he talked – about the leadership qualities and address the things that Peyton can do. But then he said something that I thought was pretty impressive. He's had a couple of pretty athletic quarterbacks. He said Robbie Ashford is the most athletic quarterback he's ever had.
Mm-hmm. I think, like, I'm really eager to see Robbie Ashford behind an offensive line that's got a little more in the way of health and, you know, kind of talent. And also, like I said, kind of a little more in the way of weapons too. Because obviously we know that he can contribute to the run game, just like regardless. We saw that at the end of the year last year especially. And, I mean, the big question is, of course, him through the air. But, you know, he played through injury last year. All 9 games that he started, he was injured. And then, of course, you know, it was just kind of the whole situation. So I'm really eager to see it. And I wouldn't be shocked if it's a pretty, you know, more intense than people expect competition. I still think it's pretty sensible to expect Peyton Thorne to come out on top of that. But I mean, Robbie's just conceptually such an exciting type of player that, you know, with this sort of reset, I'm curious to see what he does.
And to take the getting back to the expectations and where they should be, I would think there are schools in the SEC West, and granted the schedule's in flux and we don't know what it's going to look like moving forward, but if you're a team like Arkansas or Ole Miss or Mississippi State, it would be really discouraging to lose to Auburn this year because it seems to be a program trending in the right direction. And if you're one of those schools and you can't beat this Auburn team, what is next year?
Right.
Look like what is 20 like you better take advantage of you know these places in the division where historically they haven't won very often. You look at their record over the last 20 or the last 25 years, you know, against Auburn, they haven't won very many of them. If you don't win this one, like when's the next one? Because this seems to be a program that's you know that's trending in the right direction in a couple key spots.
It's going to be weird because we were looking at that schedule on the big screen in there earlier, and I was like, man, they could lose five in a row from, you know, early in the season. I could also see them doing that and also beating Alabama at home. You know what I mean? We could be in for a crazy season. But, yeah, I mean, it is going to be a weird one. It'll be interesting how kind of history kind of remembers. I don't know. I brought up that 09 season again, you know, to you really want to create some of that excitement. And, obviously, I think road win at Cal could do that. I think, you know, obviously any big rivalry win could do it. But yeah, I mean,
he mentioned during the huddle that Keontae Scott could have been one of the representatives among the other guys, right? I mean, he singled out some leaders. Elijah McAllister, the lone defensive player selected. What are you like? What did you hear from Elijah today? And what are you sort of thinking about the defense moving forward?
I just thought it was interesting with the three people he picked, but you know, so, I think Brandon Marcello had said it. Well, you know, when he was at Ole Miss and he came to SC Media Days, a lot of times he brought like glue guys. So I think a lot of us were expecting one of those defensive backs, DJ, or Nehemiah, or goodness knows a quarterback. That would have been fun. But
I kind of hope he pulled out the Joker, the wild card, and brought Robbie and Thorne.
That's what we were hoping. Do them both.
After hearing him talk about Alex McPherson, I'm surprised he didn't bring Alex. I mean, Auburn brought a kicker last year, and Alex, you know, Hugh was asked a question about Alex McPherson in the small room, and raved about the way Alex kicked because there were seasons both at Ole Miss and at Liberty where Hugh Freeze's kicking game was incredibly inconsistent and probably cost him some games. Right. And he literally pumped his arms in victory talking about Alex McPherson and what Auburn might have at kicker in the small room. It's not talked about as much as some of the other aspects on the team. Right. Auburn does, for a team coming off a disappointing season, having made a coaching change, they got to feel pretty good about what they got at the specialist spots.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, I think it fits into this whole thing about the expectations for this year, because I still think, you know, whoever the best player is at the end of the year, we don't know who it is yet. You know, we don't know who's Auburn's best player. I mean, obviously DJ is a great NFL draft prospect. Obviously Jarquez, you know, has the potential he's shown it in the past.
Yeah, who's the best transfer?
But who's the – yeah, sure, mm-hmm. sure. But, you know, and then I think, talking about running backs, I honestly don't think Tank Bigsby is very easily replaced. You know, I'll be the one to say, I don't know if the running backs are going to be – I think there's going to be a bigger hole there than people think. So, like, I think we have no idea. We're going to be at the end of the season listing Auburn's best players, and we're going to be like, had no idea at the beginning of the season.
It's just I think it's a stable of running backs. I don't know. I don't know. It's just – because, like, we just haven't seen much of Damari, and I'd imagine there's a lot there. And then I'd wonder, too, about Jeremiah Cobb, if he'll get in. And maybe that's just me watching too much Quinshon Judkins last year. But
Damari was the guy that it felt like when you asked anyone of the beat writers that got to go to the practices, or even people around the program who don't want to talk very much, like, Damari Alston seemed to be one of the first names mentioned as far as improved players, you know, guys from – you know, who's come the longest in the last year or since they arrived on campus. I don't know what that means for the running back room. Like, between Batee and Damari and Jeremiah Cobb and Jarquez Hunter, I don't know. But I wouldn't rule out the possibility of Auburn, despite losing Tank Bigsby, still being effective on the ground. I just don't want to bet on any individual player.
Right.
And at receiver, I mean, you feel good about Javarius Johnson because of what you've seen, but how much of that was because of the difference between Javarius and the other players in last year's room, and there could be some new players arriving that push Javarius for playing time or even just take the positions over.
Yeah, I'm really intrigued. Just like that receiver room, and you throw the tight ends in there too. I mean, this offense is set up so differently than like what we saw last year, and I don't know if it's from all the years of playing Madden or what, but like huge receivers to me are like my favorite thing ever. Like Randy Moss, love
you,
Randy Moss.
You and Hugh Freeze both.
I mean, yeah, I mean, seriously.
Did you say catch radius ever before? Like
yes.
6 months? Okay. Yes. You're a catch radius guy.
I'm a big catch radius guy. Big catch radius.
You
guy.
And Hugh Freeze are big catch radius.
I mean, we could let's grab a beer and talk about it. I got a couple hours. We can do it. But no, like Shane Hooks. I'm so intrigued to see what that man does. You just spent 2 years at Jackson State in one of the craziest storylines in college football, and you were the leading receiver, and you're listed at 6'6", and you're a wideout. I lick my chops at the potential of what that could be. And I throw Rivaldo Fairweather in that same boat, too. He seems really intriguing. I'm just – that's the position group that I'm curious to see what the ceiling is.
Heck, Jair Shorter's not as tall, but, I mean, he is that is a thick right. receiver, too.
And he averaged, I think it was like 20.9 yards per catch
right.
at North Texas.
Every other catch went for six.
Right, right. So you bring in these guys who have a lot of production, a lot of, you know, sort of playmaking value. And, you know, again, we'll see. I guess we've said it, you know, who is going to be the best transfer? Nobody's really banking on it yet, but it just seems like there's so many options.
How many schools added three receivers after spring practice
right,
from
yeah,
the
that's
portal,
pretty,
right? I mean, Hugh Freeze's emphasis
how
on
many needed going, to?
How many needed right. to?
Not as yeah, many. I mean, yeah. Hugh, yeah.
No, you're right. And Hugh Freeze, you know, I think, you know, he's emphasized the need for Auburn to. It's not just about scheme. It's not just about who's playing quarterback. Like Auburn's going to need to find some guys at receiver that resemble the best players on the best offenses in college football, and Auburn hasn't had that. At wide right. receiver, more often than not over the last few years.
Right, right, not since Seth.
Justin Lee,
yes.
Adam Cole,
yes.
the Shirt Brothers, hanging out here on SEC Media Days Radio Row. Tell everybody how they can find the outstanding work you guys do.
The Black Auburn News on newsstands.
The one and only.
Wherever you buy your words.
Oh,
yeah, OANow.com. We have, you can get the... You can get a print subscription, you can get a digital subscription. We got the e-edition. You can flip through it on your tablet. Very competitive rate.
I believe there was recently an edition that included news about the Auburn Network gaining the rights
I had a source.
That's right. Wings 94.3, where you can hear Auburn football games, yep. Auburn men's basketball games, and Tiger Talk starting next
soon.
Month.
I mean, right. very
should,
soon.
Yeah, should have some Tiger Talk episodes coming real soon to Wings 94.3.
And Wings, the home of Auburn High School football, also
that is right.
all up in the Black Auburn News. So check us out. High school football coming up. We're about to be time to get out there and start seeing some workouts.
Apparently, Luke Deal, a huge Wings 94.3 fan,
wow.
got like insisted on coming by and talking to us.
That's awesome.
Before learning we were the Auburn Network affiliate, yeah. insisted on coming by because he saw the Wings logo and said, "That's my station
that's
right there."
That's yes.
I've got him on tape somewhere saying, "I love classic hits."
Save that one for Al. He'll need that.
Yeah, might break that one out there for our production guy back in the okay. Opelika Auburn News.
Yep.
Justin Lee, Adam Cole. Social media preferred ways, folks. In
we're on Twitter. Bye, Justin Lee.
Cole Reporters.
Cole Reporter. There you go.
Yeah, outstanding stuff, guys. We will continue to.
Thanks, guys.
We'll check back in. We won't make it like 8 years.
next we'll time. Come back a little bit sooner.
Next time it won't be an 8 year
there
gap.
There won't be a political intrigue or anything like that.
Adam's never allowed back. Though.
it happens.
Outstanding. Thanks for making some time. Guys.
Thanks,
great
guys.
Stuff.
Thanks.
I think we need to get to our first break of hour number two. Back with more from Nashville. You can join in as well. I know Jerry called us a while ago. Jerry. If you get a chance, give us a call back here on the Tuesday Drive.
The 40th Annual World Deer Expo. Brought
here in the studio in Auburn, Dan and Radio Row up in Nashville, where Auburn among four schools today. They're on day two of SEC Media Days. And we'd love for you to join in. And we do have calls holding on the Kia of Auburn hotline, 334-321-1390. And let's get to it. And Robert is up first. Hey, Robert.
Hey, guys. How are y'all doing?
Doing all right, Robert. Thanks for the call.
Listen, I want to say thank you so much for today. I've been working out my yard almost all day. I had my earphones in. and I heard 7 hours of interviews and news about Auburn and everything. It was just a really good coverage, and I do appreciate it very much.
And one of the things that we've tried to do is not just rerun the same audio that every show has been doing. Hopefully we've been able to do that.
Well, I started off with, the drive and the other two, and not the drive,
the round table.
It started all the way up, and it wasn't the same people every time. It was just different people. Some folks I've not heard before. It was just really good interviews. It was just a really good day to listen on the radio.
Well, we appreciate that, Robert.
Yeah, I'm glad you like that. That means a lot. And, folks at the radio station have worked hard to make sure that we can be up here doing the 7 straight hours. Definitely want to say thanks again to the Orthopedic Clinic, Tim Jones Farmers Insurance, and Wickles Pickles for sponsoring our coverage of SEC Media Days on Radio Row. And, Doug and Jacob are working hard and doing a great job putting their shows on the air. And I hope you're enjoying the work we're doing here on the drive.
I listen to all three networks, all three stations, and it was really good to hear. I do appreciate it.
Appreciate the call, Robert. Do you have a question or anything, or just we appreciate that call?
No, I'm just really excited about getting football season started.
No question.
If what I think is going to happen, we're going to have at least 8 wins and a bowl win, and we're going to be real happy. But, my children say I always have my orange and blue sunglasses on, so we'll just have to wait and see. But I really think we're going to be a lot better than anybody thinks we are.
Well, we really, really appreciate the call, Robert. Thanks for listening.
All right, thanks, Nat. Appreciate it. Bye.
Back to the Kia of Auburn Hotline, and Jerry is up next. Hey, Jerry.
Hey, guys. I was real impressed with Hugh Freeze today. He really handled himself well and gave a real positive approach to the program. And I'm encouraged.
Yeah, the representation of Auburn, I thought, was strong throughout. I mean, Hugh does an excellent job every time, and he took three very worthy representatives up there with him. And we've got some more audio we'll get to if we get a chance.
Yeah, I'm anxious to hear from Elijah.
You know what? We take requests here on the show, Bill. You want to run a little Elijah McAllister?
I think that'd be great. Yes, I mean everything I heard from him today was just outstanding.
So let Jerry finish first. But
anything else, Jerry? Yeah, we're gonna get to some audio soon. But definitely wanted to give you an opportunity if you had anything else.
No, that's good.
All right, appreciate the call, Jerry.
Yeah, appreciate it. You want to Elijah was asked about sort of what the future may hold. We got time.
Oh yeah, we got plenty of time. We got a floating break at the bottom, so we're good.
Right, here.
I tell people all the time, it's like, I don't know if you ever know or seen Thanos. I want to get all the Infinity Stones I can in life. I want my family and the kids and everybody around me to understand that you can do anything you want in life, and the end goal is to continue to elevate who I am as a person, mentally, emotionally, physically, spiritually, in all facets of life, and continuing to work in academic space, working on my doctorate. I want to be able to write 2 books. In the future, I'll be a professor at university and continue to improve myself off the field. And on the field, I'll continue to become a better football player and let chips fall where they may.
That was the new Auburn Jack linebacker, Elijah McAllister, the Vanderbilt transfer, working on his PhD.
And if he's not – go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, after earning a pair of degrees at Vanderbilt, not finished, and he'll be playing his final year of college football for Auburn this fall.
I was going to say, if he's not president politically, he may be the president of a university before too long. I mean, I had not heard him talking about writing a couple of books and being a professor.
Yeah, he's talking about going into academia and at least with part. And I feel like this guy is going to have opportunities around all kinds of industries based on my limited interactions with him today. But yeah, I wouldn't bet against him. How about that?
No question. All right, we'll not
bet against him.
We'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Dan has more audio. We have room for your phone calls as we head into the final half hour of the Tuesday Drive.
888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back in. Final half hour of the Tuesday Drive. Dan up on Radio Row at the Grand Hyatt in Nashville, where the SEC Media Days are going on. Day two, and Auburn among four schools. It was Auburn, Georgia, Vandy, Mississippi State there today. We've had some bits of Hugh Freeze audio, told you about some of the things he said. Dan, you've got some longer audio, I think, that we haven't run in its entirety.
You know what else I have that I made reference to? And we can run the Hugh Freeze thing, too. But do you want to hear Kirby's answer about the UGA-Auburn rivalry? Because I asked him about keeping that game on the schedule.
Yeah, I think that's good.
And I think we referenced it earlier, but he answered, spent about a minute talking about it. He also got asked about the perceived lack of accountability in the Georgia program in the small room. And I thought his answer to that was interesting as well. But let's play the this is Kirby answering my question about the importance of keeping the Auburn-Georgia game on the schedule moving forward.
Okay, Coach Freeze is here, and we will go straight to questions.
Hold on, that's you, Freeze. Let's go here. Let's, here we go.
Coach, there's uncertainty about future schedules in the SEC, but there seems to be a push to keep the Auburn-Georgia game on the schedule. I'd love to know your thoughts on the rivalry and the importance of continuing to play that game moving forward.
Extremely important, border rivalry, a lot of ties between the two schools, the Vince Dooley-Pat Dye connection, a lot of respect for Auburn and Hugh. There's a lot of great rivalries. We seem to be, I think somebody told me this once, that we're the only school that has five contiguous states. So go figure. You end up with a lot of rivalries when you touch five states. So priorities will be based on what the SEC office thinks best. I don't have a lot of input on that. I kind of just deal with the hand that we get.
So Hugh Freeze, Kirby Smart, UGA head coach, acknowledging that that he doesn't have ultimate control over what the SEC decides to do, but he understands, and as he should, right, Bill? Understanding the importance of that rivalry, because he's been a part of it many, many times. He probably knows more about it than just about anybody else who was in that room when he was at the podium. So I thought, it was interesting to hear him, talk about the importance of keeping that rivalry on the schedule moving forward, if at all possible. So now you want to hear Coach Freeze in his
sure. I think folks would like to hear that. Get it out there before before everybody has a chance to try to read the transcript.
All right. So here's Coach Freeze in the electronic media room earlier today.
Okay, Coach Freeze is here, and we will go straight to questions. Coach, right side, second row.
Daryl Deppich, Locked On Auburn. Coach, I've heard you mention publicly before that everywhere you've been, you guys and your coaching staff has done a great job of turning around programs quickly on a timeline that's probably quicker. How do you rank the Auburn situation coming into your two previous stops? Easier, harder, as far as getting the timeline expedited?
If you'll permit me, I would love to. So when I took over at Arkansas State, they had never had a winning season since going FBS. And we won 10 games in year one, won the Sun Belt Conference. Then we come to Ole Miss, and they had not won an SEC game in 2 years. And we win 7 games that year and go to a bowl game. Then Liberty moving to FBS, which I thought was probably after spring ball, I was like, we will not win a game, because and somehow we won 8 games. Now, how do I compare Auburn to that? I've thought about this question, and I honestly don't know. I would think it would be easier at Auburn, but yet the league probably has gotten better than it was when I took over at Ole Miss. And so I'm not sure that's an accurate feeling. Now, I was blessed at all of those spots to have quarterbacks that played really well. Bo Wallace and Ryan Applin at Arkansas State, and then Buckshot to Malik at Liberty. And I think that's you don't have a trigger guy that plays well, you don't have much of a chance to turn it very fast. And so I think a lot will weigh upon how effective we are at that spot. But great question. We have had success doing that. I hope that continues.
Coach, left side, third row.
Dan Peck, ESPN 106.7 in Auburn. Coach, 42 new players on the roster since the season ended. You've been working really hard in recruiting. What are the benefits of recruiting to Auburn and any challenges you've encountered trying to recruit to Auburn along the way?
Benefits, I think Auburn should be easy to recruit to. We've got the support, the administration, the facilities, the history. It ought to be Jordan-Hare's an incredible place to go play a game in. So I think we have a lot of great things. I think the culture and the Auburn family is great to recruit to. I think the challenges are you have to hear from a lot of the players that you're recruiting that are elite players. Well, there's no alignment at Auburn. There's no alignment at Auburn. Well, that may have been the case in the past. That's not the case now. And I think they'll sense that if we can get them to campus and they can see the alignment that we have from President Roberts down to John Cohen, to myself, and to our staff. And so I think the positives far outweigh. I think the greatest challenge that you mentioned is the fact that we have 42 new players and I don't know all their names yet. That's the way I feel. I do. But, I mean, I have not had a time to have deep conversation with all of them. I mean, you literally recruit a portal kid for 2 days, you sign him, he comes to work, and particularly the ones after spring, they come to work with your strength staff, and you're trying to take a little time off, and I mean, you really, that's uncomfortable. And how we're going to mold that in a short amount of time into a unit and a team is probably one of the, that back to the first question, that may be my greatest challenge to turn this program as fast as the others, is because there's so many, there's so much new to this.
Right side, back row.
Hugh, John Sokoloff with WCBI down in Mississippi. I know you played against Ole Miss with Liberty a few years ago, but now that you're back in the SEC, you're playing against them this year, and considering your history with Ole Miss, what kind of emotions are you expecting out of that game this year?
Oh, gosh. I hadn't had a chance to think about that one. Well, the emotions I had when I went back, when I was coaching at Liberty, I would think that probably was I don't know that I'll feel a lot of emotions since I've already done that. And it was back in Oxford. But the day couldn't have gone any better other than the outcome. My family was welcomed, loved on, line at the bus to welcome me there and to see me after the game. I think most people there have great fond memories of what we did there. And obviously we're disappointed at the same time with the way it ended. But I think when time has a way of let's remember the great times we had together, and it's home to me. I mean, I was born and raised there. And so it'll always be a special place, but I have great respect for what Lane's done there, and I have a lot of friends there, and he's doing a nice job, but I really hadn't, they're coming to our place, so it won't be like I'm going back to Oxford. It would just be me, and that's been a long time. I mean, that'll be, what, 7 seasons? So it's not like, you know, it's not like it was yesterday or, so I don't think I'll have a lot of emotions other than the fact that I'm going to win.
Second row, left side, then pass the mic forward.
Okay. Hi, Coach. Claudia Chikamian with WHNT in Huntsville. Just wanted to ask, first of all, why was Cameron Stutz a guy that you wanted to bring to SEC Media Days today? And then what are you expecting out of Alex McPherson this year as kicker, his second year at Auburn, and how important is he going to be to the success of this team?
Stutz has done everything exactly the way you want an Auburn man, Auburn football player to operate. He's a senior. It wasn't easy. Jeremiah Wright's another one. But I do think you need an old lineman. I don't know. I've always believed that, man. You know, you don't get a lot done without that crew playing well. And I need one or two of those guys to be true leaders. Tate Johnson's the same way. It was not an easy decision, but Cameron's certainly worthy of being here. And then your next question was, listen, I hadn't had a kicker that could put it through the uprights in a long time consistently. It's driven me crazy now. I mean, I like to the point where I'm just going for it. And look, we hadn't had a game yet, so I'm not, but in spring practice, I was like overjoyed, like every time we kicked, like, oh my gosh, I got a kicker. This guy can put points on the board. And that's the way I felt about him after spring practice. And hopefully that continues throughout the season.
Right side, back row.
Corey LeBounty, WNSP 105.5 in Mobile, Alabama. Coach, you've been on the job close to 8 months now. What have you learned most about the Auburn culture and what fascinates you most about the Auburn program?
It may be the most welcoming, friendliest. Listen, we love we love the community. We love our church there. It's been incredible. Our pastor, Miles, has been awesome. My family is all there, so it's that makes it better for me, truthfully. I don't know. I feel like I'm the luckiest coach to have, you know, two of our daughters are out of school and married, and to have them there, and then our youngest to be a student there, and us to all get to experience this together probably makes it better. Not that the other places haven't been. I mean, we loved our time in Oxford and have great friends there, and Lord, our time on Liberty Mountain was incredible too. But the passion that the Auburn people have for this program and their hunger to see it return is evident everywhere you go. Listen, for us to sell more season tickets at this point than ever in the history of the program, I don't think that speaks to me or our staff. I just think it speaks to the fact that the Auburn people are showing their support for this program and what they believe it can be. So it's been really welcoming.
Two final questions right here, then pass the microphone back.
Kennedy Wright with CBS 42. Coach, last season, win, lose, or draw, there was this high, intense momentum that really drove the team. Can we expect to see that high intensity this upcoming season?
You're speaking of Auburn. I thought when Cadillac took over, I don't know what point in the year that was, but truthfully, there was a part of me at that point when they made the change that I wondered, because really, Jill and I kind of had a list of schools that we would consider leaving Liberty for if it ever came our way, and we weren't looking because we were so happy at Liberty and felt like we could win 8 or 10 games there every year and stay there a long time. And man, you started hearing and seeing what's going on at Auburn, and this is not the Auburn. And I remember vividly Cadillac taking over and watching the Texas A&M game, and that atmosphere in that stadium that night, I remember looking at Jill saying, oh, it's still Auburn.
That was Auburn's Hugh Freeze talking to the media today about the about his reaction just taking the big room there. That was Hugh Freeze in the electronic media room answering some questions from not just Auburn media, but assembled media about different aspects of this team moving forward.
I had not heard those comments about Alex McPherson. No wonder you were making those statements a while ago. Yeah, he was pretty excited to have a kicker.
Bill,
huh?
he is pumping his fist talking about how excited he is that he has a kicker going into this season. But I thought Hugh Freeze did a great job when he was up in the small room. And as we were saying earlier, he was largely focused on football and the job he has in trying to restore Auburn. And he told a little story there about watching the Texas A&M game and realizing it's still Auburn. And I thought that was a great way to close it.
Well, I'm glad things went this way. I mean, as we both said here earlier, more than a little surprised that there weren't some folks trying to take shots, and I'm glad that they didn't. So that turned out well, gave him an opportunity. Again, he is very comfortable there, you know, behind the mic. But, I mean, it's easy to see why some of these coaches, and Hugh is definitely one of them, are really good recruiters.
You know, and Bill, I was on that Arkansas radio show this morning. I was there at hitthatline.com.
You made it at 7 o'clock? Oh, wow.
Well, I mean, it helps when it's just downstairs from the hotel, right? It helps when you can just pop in.
Oh, okay.
I was awake at 6:53, and I was on the radio at 7 a.m. Coming down, and John and Barry were just starting their show. They're right next to us here on Radio Row. So Barry was shocked to see me, as I think you can imagine.
I am sure.
But they were, you know, they were talking about Hugh Freeze. The Arkansas guys were asking me about it, and I don't think you can undersell how much recruiting, you know, is a part of this move by Auburn to bring Hugh Freeze in. The belief that he can recruit, and I mean, the story I told the Arkansas guys, Bill, is, you know, when you recruit a certain way at Ole Miss, I can understand why people would think, given Auburn's resources, Auburn is a place that historically has out-recruited Ole Miss virtually every season. A coach who recruited the way Hugh Freeze recruited at Ole Miss, just imagine what he could maybe do with Auburn's resources, especially once he's figured out the alignment and everything else that needs to go into a successful sales pitch to recruits.
No question. Hey, let's get to James before we have to get to our final break. Hey, James, go ahead.
Hey, guys. I loved everything y'all talked about so far. It's been very insightful and very entertaining at the same time. I want to change the subject a little bit and talk about the Pac-12 for a moment.
All right.
What is going on over there? I mean, that's just, you know, I just got to say that because – all right, Greg Sankey, I think we can all admit that he's probably going to do over 100 interviews this week, right? Alone? Mm-hmm. Okay, this guy has done one podcast and hadn't talked to the media since last media days. What is the goal of his conference? I mean, because I don't see how they're going to survive that.
You need to have answers to make media appearances.
You're
right. I don't know how many
answers. If you don't have any answers, why do you want a microphone or a camera in your face?
I mean, we'll see what happens. I think that league is, you know, I wonder if in 10 years we're talking about the Pac-12, you know, the way we talk about the Big East in football right now, right, where it was a league that couldn't hold on to the, you know, the biggest draws in the league, you know, the guys who decided to go pursue greener pastures elsewhere. And when you take the marquee teams out of a conference, when you take USC and UCLA out, and potentially, I mean, we'll see if it stops with USC and UCLA, but if the Big Ten wants to expand to the West even more, Oregon, Washington, Stanford, Cal, like these are all teams that could be in the picture. I would worry about Utah, the Arizona schools, and Colorado being lured by a more financially secure Big 12. This is, and then you're looking at, I mean, what's the league then? Washington State and Oregon State?
And there's a reason.
That's the whole conference?
There's a reason that the Pac-12 doesn't have a TV deal. I mean, word coming out today, they're not going to be able to announce any TV deal because they don't have one. They're still looking for one. Sure they are, because no network is willing to, you know, commit themselves to something when they don't even know what properties they'll have.
And the offers, I mean, I haven't been in the negotiation room, but I imagine the offers the Pac-12 is getting right now are considerably worse than the offers that the Big Ten and the SEC are looking at. And maybe the Pac-12 is reluctant to sign a deal like that, hoping that a better one's coming someday. I don't know, Bill.
That's our best answer for right now, James.
Yeah, I agree. The rumors I hear is about in between $14-15 million a year per school. And listen, if all that's going to have is Oregon State, Washington State, Cal, and Stanford, I don't know. I think
Stanford ain't sticking around. Stanford ain't sticking around a league in that situation. They've got too many. I know they haven't been a football power of late, but they've won too many national championships in too many sports to just drift into irrelevance.
Yeah, they'll add to somebody's
league. The rest of a conference.
Right. True. Appreciate your call, James.
Thanks, guys.
I know we need to get to our final break. Back to wrap things up here on the Tuesday Drive.
It's been from the Abbey Award-winning Auburn Opelika this morning on News
4321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back in. Winding things down, just about out of time here on the Tuesday Drive. Been a fun, fast-paced show. Wow, there's the music.
There's the music.
Hey, Dan, let everybody know if they missed any of the show, where they can check it out.
It's a podcast of The Drive presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, available on your favorite podcasting platform. Just search for The Drive with Bill Cameron. Rate, review, subscribe, or go to ESPNAU.com and use the Podcast Center. And again, want to say thanks to the Orthopedic Clinic, Tim Jones Farmers Insurance, and Wickles Pickles for their sponsorship of our coverage of SEC Media Days.
Outstanding job today, Dan. Great stuff, great interviews. More tomorrow. Alabama is the headliner tomorrow. And Dan will be back from Radio Row again tomorrow. But we're out of time here on the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.